The Last Word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
Now, our next guest is somebody we've met on many occasions over the years, talking about the politics of Northern Ireland, of the Iraq War, and in more recent times, Brexit. But we want to talk to him about a really deeply personal new book that he has written and published, Living Better, How I Learned to Survive Depression. Alistair Campbell, thank you very much for joining us to talk about an exceptionally personal and detailed book. I mean, you have really laid yourself bare here. Why?
Why? I think because I am a campaigner on mental health. I'm trying to do what I can to change the way that we look at mental health, the way we talk about it, the way that governments and societies view it and treat it. And I want, as somebody who knows what depression is like, I want people who get depression as I do to maybe look at the book and find things in there that I found helpful, not least through working with a psychiatrist over quite a few years. And also for people who don't get depression and don't necessarily have a real sense of what it is and what it's like, maybe try to get them to change the way that they think about it. Because often, I think one of the best bits in the book is my partner Fiona's chapter, where she writes about how she tries to deal with it when I'm depressed. I think for partners and family, sometimes it's very, very difficult. So I hope it helps them as well. So I think it's a mixture of things. And then also, you know, as you say, it is very personal, not just about me, but about members of my family that have had different struggles down the years. And in a way, I want to kind of honour them and their struggles as well.
So bad for you, Alistair, that at times you have contemplated suicide. How seriously have you contemplated? I mean, how close have you come to actually ending your own life?
Well, I've been in states of suicidal ideation fairly regularly. How close have I ever got? Maybe once or twice I've actually been in that point of not just sort of suicidal ideation, but kind of literally thinking, right, now I'm going to do this, but I've never done it. And I don't think I ever will. But I think what I wanted to, I've written a lot about suicide in the book. I had a cousin who killed himself in the year 2000. It really kind of makes me angry. I remember people saying at the time, you know, God, how selfish. He's got three young kids and he leaves them. And what did, was he not thinking of them? And having been in that state where you're thinking about it, I suspect, I knew him very, very well. I suspect he was thinking of nothing else but them and hoping that in taking himself out of the equation, taking his own life, that he would make life better for them. I would be amazed if that wasn't part of his thinking, because I know what that thinking is like. You persuade yourself that actually the world would be better without you, your family would be better without you, life would be better without you, and that's what happens. And, you know, I think we're in a state at the moment with COVID and coming out of the pandemic, the economic hits that are coming, an awful lot of people, I think, are going to be facing that kind of existential challenge for all sorts of reasons. Now, I get it occasionally through depression. I now have enough strategies and tactics that I deal with my depressions a lot better than I used to. But, you know, it's a long-winded way of saying I've never done it, but I've thought about it.
You talk about having ways of actually dealing with it. There was a time when you used to deal with issues in your life through alcohol and you were an alcoholic. Now, do you think was it that dependency on alcohol which led to issues with depression, or was it the other way around?
I think it was the other way around. Now, I don't know, but I think that when I was younger and drinking very, very heavily, I suspect I was doing that because of this undiagnosed underlying depression that was going on from time to time. So I would drink literally to drown it. And then I think latterly, when I had a breakdown in my 20s, late 20s, and I stopped drinking, and I think then, as the depressions kept coming back, I drowned them in work. I think since then, maybe exercise has become a rather healthier form of addiction. I think the depression's predated the drink. I'm pretty sure of that.
And again, this is perhaps an inexact science as to what actually causes depression. But do you think, could part of it be part of your DNA, the family DNA, given that you have a brother, an older brother, schizophrenic, another one who died of alcohol-related disease?
I mean, I looked, when I was researching the book, I did look into the whole issue of genetics. And I think that what I would say about that is that if you have, you know, a pretty big, deep history of mental illness and mental health problems in your family, then it may make you more susceptible, but it is far from automatic. You know, and I say in the book that both my parents were, neither of them, my mother was one of the happiest people that anybody's ever met. My dad was, you know, he might have liked to drink, but he wasn't an alcoholic. And so I don't think it's automatic, but I think that, look, all families have got somebody who's struggling with something at most of the time. I don't think my family was, maybe, you know, yeah, when you put it like that, schizophrenia, alcohol, my own case, psychosis and depression, yeah, I can get it. Well, you can see that was maybe a bit above the average, but I think that most, as I say, I think most families deal with it, and it doesn't mean that it's come from a genetic background. I think some of it's environmental. I think some of it is in us. I don't know if I was born with something, but I can see bits of me in my own children that are the kind of happy-go-lucky side, and I can also see the bits that are on the other side.
And how much does that worry you then, that what you've lived through is something that then might also affect them in the way they live their lives, not in having to cope with you, but how their own internal feelings are?
Well, I do worry about it, and I've had cause to worry about it, because I've got a son who's a recovering alcoholic. He's 7 years without a drink, and, you know, when he was in the throes of his when alcohol was taking a grip of him, that was way worse for me and Fiona as his parents than, you know, when I was going through that. You kind of almost, you know, you're so wrapped up in yourself, you don't kind of, you're almost like you don't worry about it. And added to it, which you're half drunk most of the time. Whereas when it's your son, it's very, very, very difficult. And do I worry that that was in part related to me? Of course I do. And the light, both my past, but also, you know, if you like, growing up as my son, of course I worry about that. And likewise, my daughter, she's had issues of anxiety, which she's turned into a, you know, I can't think of a more extraordinary thing to do. She's become a stand-up comedian and channels a lot of it in that way. So, I do worry. Of course I do.
And then you said about environment, and you've been a very, very busy, active man throughout your life. First of all, working political reporter with The Mirror, then as Tony Blair's right-hand man in many respects, unelected right-hand man during the Blair government. Being busy, was that something very good for you, in rather that you wouldn't perhaps overthink things and become depressed, or did it create its own stresses and strains which may have exacerbated your problems?
I think in different sets of circumstances, both of those things. I think at times being busy is something that kind of keeps me on the level and keeps me, you know, with purpose and all that kind of thing. And then other times I would say that, you know, I think it's probably been very bad for my mental health that I'd be so active and so busy. So, you know, it's not simple, this. It really isn't. It's like, you know, and what I've, the place I've got to now, though, is that I've just got much better, partly because I've worked on it so hard, but I've got much better at dealing with it, so that I recognise the signs much more. Now, I still probably, you know, work too hard. I probably still, not at the moment, obviously, because of COVID, but I probably still travel too much and try to pack too much in. But I've worked out that I can do that, provided that I exercise properly, I sleep, I make sure that I get sleep properly, I diet, I try my best to look after the key relationships in my life, I have interests that aren't just to do with work, whether that be music or, you know, sport or whatever it might be, and above all, I'm very, very conscious of my moods, and I'm aware of them. And you know, there's a danger in that sometimes, because sometimes we can get far too wrapped up in ourselves. But I just keep a very close eye on them. I keep close check on them, because I've worked out when I am on a plunge, I've worked out ways of not staving it off, but just kind of alleviating it. And if I put those strategies into place, one of them is medication. I don't deny that. I still take medication every day. But I've now got all these other strategies that just help keep the gaps between the depressions. And I don't think I'll ever be free of it. I don't think there'll ever be a vaccine. But I do think that I'll be able to deal with it better as I go on.
One of the reasons I asked you about, you know, sort of environment and things that you've been involved in, I mean, for example, you would have borne an awful lot of criticism from political rivals and the media for your involvement with Tony Blair over things like the Iraq War and defending him over the years. I mean, did that add to the pressure on you?
Well, did it add to the pressure? I don't know. The pressure was just part of, you know, the job that I was doing at that time. And, you know, all I would say about that is that depression predated all that. I managed to, I'd say 90% of the time that I was involved in any job that I was doing, I was operating at 100% of my capacity. And sometimes I wouldn't be, and sometimes the pressure would make it more difficult. Sometimes the depression would make it, you know, a lot more difficult. I mean, I honestly can't, I'm not avoiding the question. It's impossible for me to give an answer to that because, you know, that situation was going on. Was it a very difficult situation to deal with? Yes, it certainly was. Was that likely to make it more difficult for me to, you know, to sort of have good headspace, as it were? Well, yeah, probably. But can I separate out the two and say where a kind of work ends and the impact on your mental health that takes over from that? I can't. I find it impossible to do that.
Has the book been cathartic for you? Has it helped you understand your position even a little bit better? Because I assume you've thought about this so often over the years, but doing this as a project, has it helped?
Oh, definitely. And I mean, you know, a previous book I wrote about winners in sport and politics and business, I quoted Marilyn Monroe. She had this wonderful poem she once wrote called Think in Ink. And I think in ink. So I think one of the reasons for writing a book about it is it forces you then to order your own thoughts about it. So you, what you talk about, the very, very, the deeply personal bits, whether that's about myself or members of my family who've had their own difficulties, I guess what I'm doing is I'm making sense of them. And then that's the first part of the book. And the second half of the book, I'm traveling around different parts of the world, talking to different people about different possible treatments and, you know, whether we'll ever have what you might term a cure. And that was helpful as well, because it was just very, very interesting to go and talk to different people who are real experts in their field. I got very different views. You know, for example, a psychiatrist, Joanna Moncrief, who just doesn't believe in medication. Most psychiatrists do. A psychiatrist that I talked to who was really interesting on what you can do to address guilt, whether that be guilt about your family, guilt in my case, survivor guilt about my brother, whatever it might be, what things you can do to address that, which are genuinely helpful and which I now use. So yes, it was cathartic. And also, to be honest, Matt, you know, it's nice that lots of the book's been out now for a couple of weeks, and it's gone into the bestseller list in the Sunday Times, and lots of nice feedback, and lots of people who will stop and say to me, thank you, thanks for talking about it, it really helps me. But I have to say, and I always do say to them, well, that's great, but it really helps me as well. And that is another reason why I've done it.
Living Better, How I Learned to Survive Depression. Alistair Campbell, thank you so much for joining us here on The Last Word of Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.